I'm Billy Bragg, and you're listening to Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4.
All right, here we go.
Welcome to Master Tapes. That's the sound of Billy Bragg playing live for our audience here at the BBC Maidervale Studios. In this programme, I'll be taking Billy back to 1986 and the making of Talking with the Taxman about poetry. It was the third album of his career and included songs such as Greetings to the New Brunette, There Is Power in a Union and Levi Stubbs' Tears.
Good money from her accident, she bought herself a mobile home. So at least she could get some enjoyment out of being alone. It all amounts to nothing. Together we don't stand. There is power in a union. How can you lie there and think of England when you don't even know who's in the team? Surely sexual politics has left me all over my body.
Billy, welcome to Master Tapes. Here is my original vinyl copy of the album from 1986. And I want to start with the cover itself. It says there at the top, Billy Bragg, Talking with the Taxman about poetry. And right at the bottom, it says The Difficult Third Album. What's so tricky about the third album?
Third albums are notoriously hard to make because with your first album, you've got that first burst of creativity, gets you out of your bedroom, you know, all those things you've wanted to say so much. The second album's probably all the tracks that didn't quite make it, plus a couple you've managed to sort of write on the road. But by the time you get to the third album, you've got to start showing people where you're going to go. You can't just, you know, keep turning out the same record. So the third album, I think, is often a record that defines people. If you think of London Calling was a third album,
yeah.
Born to Run, you know, they're make or break records, I think.
But in terms of your career, in a way, you can see those first two albums, Life's a Riot and Brewing Up with Billy Bragg, almost as one album separated onto two different discs.
Yeah, there was. And then in between that, in 1985, there was Between the Wars, which was an EP, yeah. Got me in the charts, got me on Top of the Pops. And by the time I came to make Talking with a Taxman about poetry, my world had changed to the extent that I ended up touring America four times. I played in Japan, I went to East Germany, I went to the Soviet Union. As I say, I was on Top of the Pops. I lost my virginity several times. And my world had changed, you know.
Completely, in many ways. So it's literally a broader world view, and there's a broader sound, a bigger sound on this album. Those first two albums, it's literally you with your guitar and your words. And I mean, you're a seasoned live performer. You'd honed the sound on the road. It's a road-tested sound up to this point, isn't
yeah,
it?
I was averaging 150 gigs a year in 84, 85, 86. Some of them were quite big. I think I played Hammersmith Odeon with Hank Wankford and the Frank Chickens in 1985. I was on the Style Council's first tour. I toured America with the Smiths. So yeah. Such talent as I had was honed by playing live on the road.
And were you writing on the road? Is this how this set of songs came together?
Anytime you get an idea, it's always good to try and follow it up. Sometimes it's on the road, sometimes it's when you've got something else you're trying to do and you have to stop and concentrate on the song. If I knew where it came from, I'd just summon them up out of the dark, but it doesn't quite work like that. It's almost like you're tuning into a frequency, and once you get that frequency, my experience then was to follow that and see if I could come out with a song or a chunk of a song that I could, you know, build on later.
And practically, you have to get it down as quickly as possible. You're lying in a hotel bedroom. Is there always a notebook by the bed? Is there always a guitar to hand?
No. There's always a scrap of paper. Last year, I wrote a song driving to a gig in Yorkshire just by, every time I got stuck in traffic, I sang a bit more into my iPhone. That's much more simple than what I used to do before.
Right,
yeah. You know, before, I mean, once I had the idea for a song but no guitar tool, I was in a van driving late at night with a Spanish guy driving around Spain, and everyone else in the van was asleep. So I wrote the song to the tune of Desolation Row, and so I could remember it. And then when I got down to a guitar, I just wrote a tune that had the same scansion as Desolation Row. It's kind of a bit of reverse engineering. So you work out techniques for writing songs.
And for Bragg Completist, which song was that? That you're based on Desolation, Dylan's Desolation.
It was The Few from Don't Try This at Home. But there's a lot of lifted Dylan stuff in my songs. Those of you, talent borrows, genius steals. That's what Morrissey told me. In fact, the song that we opened the program with, Ideology, the tune is Chimes of Freedom, Bob Dylan's yes. Chimes of Freedom. Mm. And I kept the line, you know, Dylan sings as we listen to the Chimes of Freedom clashing, and I say, you know, Ideology's clashing. You're always picking up on stuff, and you want people to... I've always wanted people to see my influences. That's why I put those two lines from a Simon and Garfunkel song at the start of New England. Simon and Garfunkel were important to me. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
There's a great story in your book in The Progressive Patriot where you talk about being at school in Barking, and there's a train station overlooking the playground, and it's a train platform on which Paul Simon wrote, what, Cathy's song, was it?
Well, it's actually more that he was going from A to B, where he lived in the East End and where Cathy lived in Brentwood.
Right.
To get there by train, you'd have to go...
But you imagined that at some point...
He was passing the school playground where I was kicking a football around my mates, yeah. That's my idea, yeah. If you're going to be a creative person, you have to be able to take facts and join the dots in a different way. And that's what I'm doing in a lot of these songs, particularly the relationship songs. I'm yes. just joining the relationship dots in a different way.
And a lot is going on in your life at this point, so it's a stimulating creative time. But if you think about it, it's only 5 years before you were in the army. And I mean, that was a short-lived career, wasn't it? Mm. Was it 90 days? You bought yourself out. But I presume your world had changed so much that you were heading in a different direction. You knew this was your life, this was your career from now on.
Yeah, I mean, now I'd finally achieved what I'd set out to do in the mid-70s with no idea how to do it, which was to make a living doing what I always wanted to do, which was play music. I think that's the great challenge for all artistic, creative people, is to try and work out how it's possible to make a living, to give up their rotten old day job and earn a living doing what they love doing.
And your first band called, what was it, Riff Raff, wasn't it? But, I mean, you had no... You didn't expect that to earn you a living, did you? That was just a means of expression, I presume.
No, I think during punk, anything could happen. You know, in those times, you were encouraged to express yourself, and I kind of kept that idea going, you know, that do-it-yourself idea. That's what ended up with me making a record that's just me and an electric guitar. The first album, Life's All Right with Spy versus Spy. You know, why wait for someone else to make the music you want to hear? Go out and make it yourself. That's what punk said to me. And funny enough, that's what I say to my 18-year-old son when he complains that modern music is rubbish. I say, this is good. You know what you want to hear? Go make it. And so he borrows my guitars, he steals my guitar leads. You know, he's trying to work that out for himself now.
So you say you're accumulating songs all the time. You're always writing. When do you know an album is ready to be recorded?
Well, when Peter Jenner rings you up and says he's booked the studio
time.
Time
for
yeah.
one.
Yeah, really.
Peter Jenner was your manager.
Yeah, it's my manager. And he wanted me to be more involved in the whole process of making records. But I was rather resistant to that. No single off the first album, no single off the second album. Fight for Between the Wars to come out on my terms. I did have some really stand-up shouting matches with him and with Andy Kershaw about making singles.
Just to explain to people, Andy Kershaw was actually your roadie at the time.
He was, yeah. He'd been a radio DJ on a radio station in Leeds called Radio Air.
Yeah.
And he got a sack for playing Billy Bragg records, among other things. And he was, you know, really thought I should be having a go at the charts. I didn't feel that so much. Ultimately, I think I talked Go Disc into putting out Days Like These, or one of those tracks. Well, it might even be Between the Wars EP, but the deal was that I had to have a single from the next album. And that's when I started thinking seriously about how to make the next album different and move on the idea of what Billy Bragg is about.
Which was the first song off this album that you wrote?
That's a very difficult question. Looking at them, I would guess it was probably Power in the Union, because it would have been the miner strike going on, and that would have been something that was having a very heavy influence on my music. I was trying to write a song in the style of Joe Hill. I discovered this guy, Joe Hill, who was a Swedish immigrant to the United States of America, and he was a member of the Industrial Workers of the World Union around the turn of the 19th, 20th century. And he wrote all these amazing union songs. And there's a film called The Long Riders. It's about the James Gang. Great movie. But the soundtrack is really great. It's by Ry Cooder. And on that soundtrack, there's a brilliant, brilliant version of an old song from the American Civil War called Rally Round the Flag, Boys. And I just lifted that tune, Rally Round the Flag, Boys. The chorus of that goes, the Union forever, hurrah, boys, hurrah. Down with the traitor and up with the star. Yes, we'll rally round the flag, boys, rally once again. Shouting the battle cry of freedom. I'd worked out that riff in a sound check somewhere.
Right.
And during the strike, I thought, you know, ooh, if I just change the words around a little bit there, that'll give me that kind of Joe Hill song. You know, it is a sloganeering song. It is a song that is kind of out of place from the more personal songs on there. Of the love songs, Greetings to the New Brunette was probably the first properly realised love song that I was happy with for this album. It kind of set the tone as an opening track. I mean, I didn't realise it would be so produced as it is on the record, but it had all the things that a Billy Bragg love song should have.
It also has one of the great Billy Bragg lines, of course, which is, how can you lie back and think of England when you don't even know who's in the team?
Yeah.
Is it a song which is built around that line?
It could be. I do sometimes get a good line like that and think, ooh, I wonder what the rest of the song sounds like. But, I mean, I'm one of those guys who just has, you know, scraps of paper, writing down bits, and then you realise that this bit goes with that. For instance, the riff for Levi Stubbs, just the guitar riff, was recorded right at the very end of the Brewing Up sessions, because I'd purchased this here Burns Steer guitar, which kind of defined the sound of Talking with the Taxman About Poetry.
The guitar that you've got with you
the
today
very same
is the same guitar
I have
you
with
recorded
me today,
the album.
Yeah. I picked it up in a guitar shop on Hammersmith Broadway when I was out looking for some swimming trunks. And I'd still swim naked as a result. I never did get the trunks, but I got the guitar, which was great. It's the first guitar I ever bought. In fact, it's the only guitar I ever played that looked as good as it sounded. It's the heaviest guitar I've ever played. Look, feel the weight of that.
Oh, it is,
isn't it? Like a grand piano, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a strange guitar. On the headstock, at the top of the neck, where a normal guitar would come to end, this has kind of like earwig horns and a kind of satanic things. In fact, some people used to refer to it as the earwig.
And it's been around the world with you.
It has several times. The horns have been knocked off and glued back on again a couple of times. And the amazing thing about it is, after all that time, it's still in tune. But as you can see, the jack plug doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
That guitar riff that we were talking about from Levi Stubbs here, is that riff.
That's Substitute by The Who, isn't it?
Not quite.
Other way round, inverted.
Not quite. Substitute's more kind of... You didn't think I could do that, did you? But, nor did I. But I think at the very end of that, we were goofing around the studio, and I wrote this rap about Lenin. Don't ask me why, but the whole tune was based around that riff. And some months later, I was on a cross-channel ferry with Andy Kershaw, and he would not shut up. He was talking and talking and talking and talking. And I thought, the only way I can make him stop talking is if I write a song. I said, Andy, I can't talk, mate. I've been a song coming on. Sorry, mate, I've got to write. Oh, so he went up on the deck and had a smoke.
Right.
And I wrote Levi Stubbs' Tears.
I want to ask you a bit more about that song in detail later on. But the first guitar that we hear on Talking with the Taxman, in fact, that's not you, that's Johnny Marr, isn't it? On Greetings
to the New Brunette. Yeah, all that lovely guitar playing.
And that signals the change in sound with this album, because for the first time you bring in session musicians, not only Johnny Marr from the Smiths,
but I like to think of him more as a friend than a session musician. But
but there are others, weren't there? And the sound palette broadened. Was that intentional? You thought, I need to challenge myself, I need to step up in some way creatively?
Yeah. On the third record, the producer was John Porter. And John Porter was someone who worked here for the BBC at Maida Vale. He did the Peel sessions and the Kid Jensen sessions. That's how we kind of all knew him. You know, he'd worked with me on my sessions, but he'd also worked with the Smiths, and he produced the first two Smiths records, I think, as a result. And I think he suggested Johnny'd come down and have a mess around and see how that worked. And it worked pretty well, I thought.
You didn't feel inhibited at all, or did you feel challenged by having these musicians around?
Yeah, musician. I've often had that feeling, yeah, when musicians are in the room. I do feel a bit, you know, as if I have a chip on my shoulder and something to prove, but not so much as when I hear singers. That really gets me going. No, I was a huge fan of the Smiths and a huge fan of the way Johnny played.
Yeah.
To watch him play, to watch the sounds that he got out. Technically, I'm not musical in the sense that I write music, but I listen to what's happening and I follow the sound. If it sounds good, I put that in. And he kind of was like that. He was feeling his way around those songs. He wasn't thinking his way around those songs, is my sense.
And you'd been on tour with the Smiths in the States before you recorded the album.
That's
so you
right,
knew
yeah.
what you could do. But the sound of America feeds into this album as well, in a way that you don't really hear on the first two albums. I mean, the second track on the album is Train Train, and it's got that sort of sense of expanse, and you're travelling across America.
Yeah.
And the other obvious one is Help Save the Youth of America.
I was trying to make sense of my world. You know, I had a different perspective from before You know, I'd been to the United States of America. I'd really enjoyed it. But the music, you know, the music of the United States of America, I've been listening to for a long time. So the kind of hints of it were knocking around earlier. Mm. But on this one, I felt confident to be able to try and speak to an audience that was in America. That's the thing that was different. Because this was the Reagan years when, you know, because of the Thatcher government, we were kind of very, very close, perhaps the closest we've been in the post-war period, to the foreign policy of the United States of America. So that sense that whoever they elected as president was going to be president for us as well, I felt that very, very strongly. And in some way, I'm trying to, you know, turn around their idea of saving the world, in inverted commas, with a real way of actually engaging with the world in a more peaceful way, in a more helpful way.
It's interesting that nearly three decades on, I mean, there still is a relevance and a resonance to that song. I mean, almost every line could apply today from your point of view, I presume, apart from, and there's a reference to the Rio Grande and Chernobyl.
That's right,
the incident
yeah.
at Chernobyl, which, of yeah. course, had just happened.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But and, otherwise, the sense of the imperial wars, the sense yeah. of imposing democracy
well,
abroad.
Rio Grande, Afghanistan also fits into that space. That's the bane of being a topical songwriter, is the songs keep coming back and being topical again. Most annoying, you know, you write a song about the Falklands War and 10 years later you get a letter from some kid who's out in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, saying this song really resonates with me. And, you know, you think to yourself, well, you know, the power of song to help people to access feelings, whether they're feelings of anger or joy or pain or happiness, you know, song is a very powerful medium for doing that kind of thing, and that's what I try and do with these songs.
And you've always been associated with the political songs, with the protest songs, and yet, I mean, you look through the back catalogue, there are always more love songs, more songs about relationships than the political songs, and possibly on Talking with the Taxman, those two themes coalesce, and you get love songs in which politics are mentioned, you get political songs which have a kind of romantic aspect to them. Is that what you were doing consciously, or do you think the two things were just starting to blend?
I think that I'm most interested in those personal songs where the personal and the political overlap. There's an element of that in Greetings to the New Brunette where it talks about the ideological cuddle, it's more friendly. The next record, Workers' Playtime, there's a song called Valentine's Day is Over, which the relationship between the two people is more or less dictated by their economic circumstances. So those are the things I was more interested in exploring. I don't really like sloganeering, which is odd when you think I wrote There is Power in a Union.
And to bring you back to the idea of Billy Bragg, the romantic, you know, the softer side of Billy Bragg. And you mentioned that line from Greetings to the New Brunette, the idea of the ideological cuddle. Sexual politics have left me all in a muddle. We are joined in an ideological cuddle. In a way, I mean, that could have been the title for the album, couldn't it?
It could have, the ideological cuddle, yeah. You know, you're trying to reinvent yourself as a modern man, a new man, or whatever those things are. On paper, it all makes sense. In practice, it can sometimes be a little bit more difficult.
And the title instead was taken from Vladimir Mayakovsky's poem, 1926, Soviet poet, and it's about the empowerment that you can get through words. It's about the changing
it's
power.
It's about
words,
isn't it? Mayakovsky talks in the first stanza of his poem, Talking with a Taxman About Poetry, about the role of the poet in a worker's state. And he finishes off, it's printed on the inside of the sleeve.
Well, we have it here.
He
yeah.
does, yeah. Can you see the last four or five lines? He basically says, if you think I'm just picking up other people's words out of the ether to use, then here, comrade, take my pen.
Let me give you my pen and you can yourselves write your own verses.
That's right, yeah. He's basically saying that songwriting is a job too. Give me a break, you know. This is a proper job. I'm doing it. And there's no way, Mum, I'm going to go back and work in the car factory. So, you know, that was my other struggle. In fact, there's a fabulous photograph on the back of the album yeah. of me. It was taken in East Germany in
1986. Trudging through the snow with your guitar case.
And I'm on my way. It's the Political Folk Song Festival in East Berlin in February 1986. And I'm on my way to the Narva Lightbulb Factory to do a gig in the Narva Lightbulb, in the Fabulous People's Lightbulb Factory. And I played in front of the toilets at lunchtime. So nobody was really interested in this oik with his loud electric guitar and his dreadful Cockney accent. But the people from East German radio were there and they were asking me what I thought of the Fabulous People's Lightbulb Factory. And I just said, look, mate, I do this job so I don't have to work in a hole like this. That didn't go down so well. So,
talking of East German factories, and in fact, you mentioned Leningrad, and there's a yeah. line in Wishing the Days Away in which the protagonist of the song, or maybe it's you, is saying they're making history in the Lenin shipyards. Here I am in the Hammersmith Hotel, wishing my days away. What's the thought behind that, then?
Well, Wishing the Days Away was one of those songs where you ask yourself, what am I doing? You know, there's so much else going on in the world, and I'm messing around, you know, living out of a suitcase, generally, when you sit down to write, you're kind of writing what you know. Really, you're writing about your surroundings. You're trying to make sense of what you're doing. And I was doing this job, and a lot was happening. The reference to the Lenin shipyard is actually in Gdansk in Poland, and that was about solidarity. And it was just my way of connecting with the huge things that were happening both internationally, but also in our own country with the miner strike, which was a form of class war that went on for a year, some semi-militarized state that we lived in. And I'm sort of doing this job and singing these songs. And am I, you know, I think the telling line in it is someone's knocking at the door. It's later than I think. It's time to put on these stinking clothes and get out there and stink. This was my life now. This is what I'm doing. This is what I wanted to do. Why does it not make so much sense as I thought it did? There are some people in rock and roll who, like myself, like all of us, focus their entire lives on doing the job and becoming successful in the hope that it will make them happy. And it doesn't make them happy. In fact, it makes them worse. I'm not a person like that. I've always been happy about what I do. I have my days where I think, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? This is stupid. Everybody has those kind of days. But I've seen people I've admired, people who've had huge careers, and it's painful to watch because you know that whatever it was they were hoping to find in this, whatever realisation they wanted, it's still beyond their reach. And I find that hard because I don't know what else I would be doing if I wasn't doing this. Well, I do know what I'd be doing. Mm. I would be doing exactly what I'm doing now, except I'd be doing it on the street corner and people would just be walking by.
You're sure of that? 100%. You would have carried on 100%. Whatever.
I mean, when I was in the army, the whole point really of joining the army wasn't just to drive tanks, although that was a nice part of it. It was partly to finally snuff out this stupid idea that I could ever be a singer-songwriter. And what happened when I got there? I just got more inspired to write more songs. Every day, someone said something, like Mayakovsky, and I was writing it down. And I was just thinking, I thought to myself, you know what? This is just stupid. So that's how I ended up buying myself out. And that final return and that urge to just go and do it, no matter what happens to me, doesn't matter about a band, I haven't even got time for that. Pick up the guitar, go. That was still pushing me on when it got to Taxman, except now there was nothing to push against. Everything had opened. I could go anywhere. I could play with anyone. I could do whatever I wanted. And that, I was trying to come to terms with that, I think, in Wishing the Days Away.
And one of the songs on the album, it was one of my favourite songs.
But it's not a good thing to talk about the relevance of the lyrics of a Billy Bragg song. Let me give you an example. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for a New England. Duh. You know, I mean, it's like they're songs. And they're not always you that's the protagonist in the song.
Yeah.
You know, people have asked about Greetings to the New Brunette. If there was a Shirley, yeah, there was plenty of Shirleys. And there are about five or six different people in that song. And there are about three or four different me in that song as well. I did was I took those encounters, which are real, and then run yourself through the experience and put other things. What would happen if? Here's that funny line I wish I'd blooming said when we were there in that moment. I didn't say it. I'm going to say it now.
Well, let's look at one of your best love songs. I think a song that for many people is one of the greatest of your career, Levi Stubbs' Tears. It almost unfolds like a mini play for today. With the money from her accident, and immediately we're thinking, what accident? Who is she? Is that the way that you saw it? Do you write songs in that way very often? Are you creating these scenarios that otherwise could have played out in a short story or a film?
Well, you've got to grip the listener. You haven't got long. You've only got 3 minutes. You've got to start your opening line with something that grasps people, you know. With the money from her accident, she bought herself a mobile home. Something terrible's happened to her and she's running away from it.
And Levi Stubbs, a man with the most amazing, heartbreaking voice, the lead vocalist from the Four Tops. So obviously a Four Tops fan yourself.
Huge Four Tops fan. There was something about the sob in Levi Stubbs' voice that got me every time. There's a song, Still Waters Run Deep, that they have, where he speaks. It begins with Levi Stubbs saying, "Walk with me." It sounds like the voice of the Almighty. If I ever have an encounter like that and a voice in the dark says, walk with me, like Levi Stubbs does there, I'll imagine it's either God or Levi Stubbs. It's going to be...
And it's a lovely idea about Levi Stubbs' tears rolling down her face, because it's the idea that soul music has the capacity to carry you through the pain, because soul music knows the pain. Soul music's about the pain.
The redemptive power of soul music was what I was trying to get near in this song, in a way, and try and explain something that you don't really think about, that you can't really just write how it makes you feel. You've got to somehow tear it up and put the pieces back together in another way, and that's what I was trying to do with the song. And, you know, I think that when you're trying to access something so emotive as redemption, it doesn't always work to get too close to it. Sometimes in songwriting, you're relying on people's peripheral vision. You're showing them a little bit of what's going on and allowing them to fill in the rest. It doesn't do to join all the dots for everybody. You want the listener to bring their own, not only their own narrative to the song, but their own emotions to what you're putting down.
So, she, the woman in the song, she remains nameless throughout. And as does. You say, I mean, all songs are part imagination, part personal experience. But was there a she? Was there this situation playing out somewhere?
No, I felt strongly that men should write about domestic violence. I spoke earlier about the song Valentine's Day is Over, and I can remember some women challenging me by saying to me, because Valentine's Day is Over, again, is about a woman who's a victim of domestic violence, and these women were saying to me that I could never write a song from the perspective of a woman because I don't know what it's like. And I said to them, yeah, but I'm not writing for women. I'm writing for men. I want men to hear me say that domestic violence is not acceptable. That's my audience. I respect exactly what you're saying. You're right, I can't write that. But I'm talking to other men. Songs can't change the world. It doesn't work like that. Only the audience can change the world. But what a song can do is give you a different perspective of the world, whether that's the world of politics, whether it's the world of human emotions, or whether it's just the world of walking your dog. That's the only reason to ever write a song, is to offer a different perspective. And that's what I was trying to do with Levi Stubbs Tears.
Billy, I'd like you to play us out with Levi Stubbs Tears. For now, thank you very much, Billy Bragg. That's it for this part of the programme, the A-side, if you like. And as Billy plugs in and gets ready to play us out, there's just time for me to tell you that in the second part of this edition of Master Tapes, the B-side, our audience will be posing the questions. You can hear that next Monday night at 11 o'clock, and you'll be able to hear both programmes at the Master Tapes pages on the Radio 4 website, along with exclusive live versions of some of the songs that we've been discussing in this programme, including this one, Levi Stubbs Tears, Billy Bragg.
She bought herself a mobile home so at least she could get some enjoyment out of being alone. No one decided she was left up on the shelf.
I hope you enjoyed that. You can find clips, videos and photos on the Radio 4 website. It's at bbc.co.uk/radio4.